The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s, with your hosts, Adam Emmert.
Now's not the time to be putting on 12 to 15 pounds and having to take it back off. Just a joke. I promise you one thing. You're getting out of work, son.
And Brandon Schultz.
You don't need to put the word A in front of those players' names. You can just say their name.
Go Hawks!
On a quest to own the West, yippee-ki-yay, we make the ground shake, on game day 12 man, yeah, he's feeling it, he's vital, the Seahawks coming to take division titles, we are Coach Cal, cause he's in, I'm in, we all in.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz, member of the Military Seahawkers, and across the table from me, sitting in his home on Jupiter Street, Adam Emmert.
Now you're giving out, what, are you like a Houston Texan fan where you like you give out Matt Schaub's home address? Is that,
people are
going to
be camping out on your hot lawn.
Yeah, yeah.
In your little bit of sprinkler water that you have sprouting up.
Yeah,
Is that still going on? Are you still?
I'm making still that half-hearted attempt at keeping the gold grass green, but I'm
like
losing
we're on the
badly.
Surface of Jupiter in your house right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is hot. Yeah, yes. I wish I knew that whole Robin Williams rant from Good Morning Vietnam about how hot it was. It's hot. It's like sitting on the surface of the sun. Damn hot. Yeah.
That's a good one to memorize.
Yeah, it's a good one.
If you ever had some time.
Yeah, no, it was good. But yeah, so here we are.
Here we are.
It's, back in the podcast studio.
Back in the podcast studio for the second time. And we got some Seahawks news to talk about this week. And we're also going to get to an interview with 49ers podcaster, the Better Rivals podcast. Mm-hmm. Oscar comes on the show today to talk a little bit of 49ers as we get to know our rivals and kind of what's been going on with them this offseason. And if you're a Seahawks fan, obviously you can't have missed everything that's gone on with the 49ers, especially with Jim Harbaugh leaving.
You actually might have missed some of the things that went on with the Niners because
there's so much
that happened. And Oscar touches on that. He was very cordial, and that'll be the bulk of the show today. And a great interview. And you should really listen because you're going to have a much deeper sense of the 49ers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And but before we do that, we're going to get to some Seahawks news because there is some Russell Wilson talk around his contract going on.
Huh? Really?
It's kind of all there is to talk about in the offseason, which is why that story keeps popping up because it is the only thing to talk about this offseason.
Yeah, sure does.
And you know, we have a little bit of Michael Bennett we can talk about. he's in the news. So that story's probably going to go a little bit.
God, he looks so bad.
Yeah.
He looks so bad.
I'm not quite sure what he's thinking, but you know, maybe he's just having fun with it.
Maybe.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that recognizes how slow the offseason is.
And he's just trying to help us all out, give us something to think about.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So this is a gift for Michael Bennett?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Let's start off with Russell Wilson, Adam, because this last week we saw the story that came out that said that Russell Wilson turned down a Cam Newton style contract.
I'm sure he did.
And that he wants to be the highest paid guy. In fact, he was on ESPN.
Shocker.
And threw out the big $25 million number. He said whether it's $1.5 million or $25 million that he's going to be playing hard for the Seahawks this coming season.
It's so ridiculous. It is so ridiculous. Everybody gasp. Russell Wilson's greedy. He wants to be the highest paid player in the NFL. Well, bleeping duh. Like, if you go into the negotiation, if you've ever negotiated for anything, do you ask for exactly what you want?
No.
Or do you ask for, I don't know, maybe quite a bit more than what you want?
Right.
That's how it works. I mean, I'm not a business genius, yet I can figure that out. Yeah. Yet somehow that turns into a big narrative and gets a bunch of fans all riled up. What a joke.
Russell Wilson is greedy for wanting to be the highest paid athlete.
I'll tell you what. I listened to both Mark Brunell and Tim Hasselbeck talk about the Russell Wilson contract and his demands and all that. And both of them said straight up, this is exactly what you do.
Yeah.
Mark Brunell was like, I was a young quarterback once coming into you know, my one big deal. And I was actually the highest paid quarterback at that time for, you know, 6 months or so. And he said, you know, there's John Elway's in the league, and he rattles off a bunch of legends, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, was I the best quarterback? No. But because I was a young quarterback who had performed well, that's how it works. That's how the business aspect of it works. So, yes, I ended up being the highest paid quarterback for a short period of time. He's like, that's exactly what's going to happen here with Russell Wilson, too. Like, everybody just freaking out about his, quote, contract demand, whatever. But the other thing is, you see another story come out. How many stories have you seen come out, by the way?
All of them.
Good Lord, with every scenario under the sun. But the big one, one of them that I actually believed was, the biggest holdup is the guaranteed money, not all that fluff at the end of the contract that nobody ever freaking sees.
Right.
I said this weeks ago. You were talking about Russell needing to be in the $100 million quarterback club. I don't think he gives a rip about that. It's about how much guaranteed cheese he's going to get. And I think that's really where you see the contention, because his agent is a baseball agent working on that idea of fully guaranteed contracts. And I think he's pushing the envelope further in the guaranteed area. And I think that's what's keeping the sides apart at this point. Will they come together? Yeah. Because at the end of the day, it is not in Russell Wilson's best interest to play out this contract.
Yeah.
It's just not. He'll never remake that money that he'll leave on the table this
year. Well, and that's why I don't buy the whole idea of Mark Rogers, Wilson agent, you know, tweeting out the fact that there is no deadline. I think the more he talks about how there is no deadline, the closer to the deadline we're actually getting, because we are coming up on the deadline.
And the more rhetoric overall you hear from both sides.
Oh, you know it's getting closer. And that's why I kind of like hearing all this talk about something actually happening. If Russell Wilson is turning down offers for Cam Newton-style money, that
which
means,
he should.
That means they're at the start of their negotiation to where they need to come together to actually make something happen. Because yes, that might be the first contract that the Seahawks offer up, and he would obviously turn down because that's part of the negotiation.
Exactly.
I think this all started way back when you heard that story about John Schneider calling and complaining about how Ryan Tannehill cost the Seahawks money.
Right.
Because I feel like that to me is where if you're gonna leak something out, leak that out, because now you're making it sound like oh Ryan Tannehill, that's kind of the area that we were gonna be bargaining for with Russell Wilson. So now that you've
the bar
got
is raised because Ryan Tannehill is clearly inferior in talent.
Right. Which, when in no manner is that any kind of truth. Now, when Cam Newton came out, now we said that's kind of more along the lines.
It's one of your first good comps.
Right. And so that's what it feels like to me.
Absolutely. And then you have, you know, they're just articles that go all over the spectrum on this, and it's a lot of garbage. So just ignore the noise.
Take
Russell Wilson's own quote and apply it to this. Ignore the noise.
The thing to me, and people getting kind of the idea of greed, and it's Russell Wilson going to get too much. You know, once Russell Wilson gets his contract, do you know how much any of us are going to care? We might care if he doesn't perform, if he goes out there and doesn't live up to kind of how he's performed in the last few years. But if he goes out and continues to do Russell Wilson things as he's done in the past years, if Seattle goes to the playoffs, do you think anyone is going to give a rip about whether or not he got paid $21 million or ended up getting paid 23 or 25? Nobody is going to care.
Zero craps.
Do you think Packers fans are worrying about whether or not Aaron Rodgers is making too much money?
Yep.
He's taking their team to the NFC Championship, whether or not they have an extra $5 million to pay another guy that maybe put them over the edge. If they, you know, they had enough to win that NFC Championship game with Aaron Rodgers making the most money of any quarterback in the league. So if the Seahawks, and that was 2 years ago that the Packers, the salary cap has gone up in the last 2 years.
And it's going to go up a ton over the next couple years because the TV money's going up huge.
A ton. So if Russell Wilson gets $25 million, I have no problem with that.
It's going to feel like a bargain in 2 to 3 years.
It will. And the reason why I think that too, I can make a solid argument for Russell Wilson to be the highest paid quarterback. And I can throw out one name, Stan Gelbaugh. Kelly Stauffer, Dan McGuire. Yeah. Those are the three quarterbacks you had in 1992. And when I look at these reports, Adam, that where I see that there are 54,000 people on the season ticket waiting list for the Seahawks, you know that's a big part of Russell Wilson, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also saw another report there where there's like a huge list to get on the blue preferred list or whatever it's called.
The Blue Pride list,
there's
a waiting list to get on the waiting list.
Right, and you pay to be on both of those lists.
Well, the first list you don't pay to be on, but...
It said in the article you did.
Oh, well...
I mean, maybe I misread or something.
Yeah, I think how it works is you can get on the waiting list for the season ticket waiting list. But once you're on the... I think it's actually the Blue Pride list is what the waiting list is called. But yeah. And you have to put a deposit down.
Yeah,
but,
so Russell Wilson may have had an impact on that. You know, maybe just being 3 years in the league and winning playoff games every year that he's been in the league. Oh, and then, I don't know, maybe bringing the first Super Bowl title ever to Seattle.
Right.
Yeah. Kind of worth it.
But that's the thing. If you pay Russell Wilson $25 million, you know, the complaint is, oh, well, maybe you can't bring J.R. Sweezy back, or maybe you can't bring, you know, you can't pay a high-level left tackle, or you can't bring back Russell Okung.
Yeah.
You know what? People are not packing CenturyLink Field to see Russell Okung or J.R. Sweezy. They're coming in there to watch Russell Wilson do Russell Wilson things.
Sure. I mean, and that's on a business perspective when you look at that. Now, you talk about the talent aspect and your team going to be less talented in maybe some other spots because Russell's making more money. Sure. And you brought up Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers saying, well, heck yeah, we're have no problems with paying Aaron Rodgers top money because he can take our team all the way to the Super Bowl every year nearly single-handed, which isn't exactly true, but you understand what I mean. The team revolves around him.
Yeah.
And that's the argument you hear against Russell Wilson, right? Oh, it's the running game. It's the defense. He's not that elite. Here's the thing that I'll throw out at you, and I wish I had the numbers up in front of me, but I looked this up. If you took Russell Wilson and you took his passing numbers with yards, touchdowns, and you took his rushing numbers, yards, touchdowns, and you add those together, and you take Tom Brady's, and you take his passing yards and his rushing yards, and you add them together just like that.
He doesn't have a whole lot of rushing yards. He might be in the negative on that end.
That's exactly right. But you compare those numbers, and they're within, you know, a couple hundred yards and within a couple touchdowns production.
I think Brady was a little bit higher still production-wise, but it's close.
But it's very, very close.
Right.
And I'm sorry that Russell Wilson does it differently than you're accustomed to. You hear Oscar later in the podcast say Russell Wilson's not elite. And I said, I'd argue it, but I kind of let it go because we're talking about 49ers. Here's where I'll argue it without him here because it's easier. But the point is, you just look at that. He is elite. He puts up elite production. Does he do it in a different manner? Yes. But you can't penalize the guy for it. So if the idea that he can't carry a team, I'm sorry, he has the same level of production as Tom Brady, and Tom Brady carries a team. Same level of production as Aaron Rodgers, and he carries a team when you add up everything that he does on the field. And that's my point. And so when people start freaking out, is he being greedy because he wants to be the highest paid player? No, because he's in that category.
Yeah, and I don't mind if people don't call him elite. I'm kind of over that argument at this point because if it kind of says to me that you just aren't watching.
But they're wrong. Yeah, that's just it.
It just says to me that they're not watching, and that's fine. Especially if you're a 49ers fan, you're going to only watch the Seahawks a couple times a year. And if Russell Wilson, you know, does average things in those games, then yeah, you might think he's an average quarterback. But
sure.
When you watch him all season long, and when you've seen
the eyeball test, the stats, the accomplishments, everything adds up.
It all adds up. So, yes, I have no problem with, and I do think that it's getting closer. And that's why I posted on our Facebook page this week the Chris Wessling article from January that the Seahawks are poised to make Russell Wilson the highest paid quarterback.
Right.
I kind of think that was probably coming from somewhere, and I kind of think that that's probably where this is going to end up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, really what the problem is with these negotiations is Ciara. This is all her fault.
It's all her fault.
Because he was such a humble, easygoing guy that he would have signed for, you know, Andy Dalton money probably if it hadn't have been for Ciara. It's definitely all her fault.
I thought it was Mark Rogers being a baseball agent. I thought it was his fault.
No, you're crazy. Don't take those real tangible things that affect stuff like the agent. It's definitely Ciara and her influence.
I don't have a problem with his agent either, and I feel like a lot of people...
I kind of do a little bit. I think he's doing Russell a bit of a disservice. I heard Mike Salk talk about this this on Brock and Salk.
I don't agree with Salk on this at
all. I actually do agree with Salk on this.
No, I don't, because when it comes to being an agent, I feel like it kind of doesn't matter. I think that when you're an agent, you're kind of smart enough to figure out that different sports are a little bit different in how contract negotiations are handled.
I don't think that's what his point was.
He's negotiated contracts before.
I don't think that's what his point was. I think what his point was is that Mark Rogers, not only does he understand the difference, but he's trying to game the system and trying to change the way contracts are done in the NFL to really help out the players. And I think it's so that when he goes to look at and get more clients, he can say, look, I totally changed the game.
Isn't that good business, though? Isn't that what you
for
want
Mark
to do?
For Mark Rogers, yes.
Right.
Right. That's not good business for Russell Wilson.
Well,
and
if
that's
he wants
the problem.
To be the highest paid, it might be.
It's not good business for Russell Wilson because the Seahawks aren't going to do what Mark Rogers is going for here. Basically, if he ends up playing out this deal, that is money out of his pocket and that hurts his client. And at the end of the day, you're being a crap agent.
I think that you said at the very beginning, part of the negotiation is asking for things you know you're not going to get.
Sure.
And so that's why you shoot as far out as he has been.
Right. Well, let's see if he capitulates. Let's see if they actually bend. But if Russell Wilson ends up playing out his rookie deal this year, you did a poor job as Russell Wilson's agent.
I would agree with you. If he does end up playing out his rookie deal, his agent did a bad job.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on to Michael Bennett. We talked a little bit about this at the opening. Mm-hmm. Michael Bennett said, "I don't mind staying at home." And reports went wild. Reports went wild at him that he could hold out when training camp starts.
30,000 a day?
Yeah.
I finally figured out what the number was. It's 30,000 a day, and it escalates.
Yeah, yeah.
The more that you miss, that ain't happening. Look, if Michael Bennett really, like, his whole beef on this, and I've gone off on this before, is that, well, I've outperformed my contract. I need more money. Well, guess what? How come the players say, like, I don't know, a Sam Bradford, when he woefully underperforms a gigantic contract, guess how much of that money he's giving back?
He's not giving back any.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you can't have it both ways.
No.
So shut up, dude.
The thing to me that's funny about this, though,
God,
Adam,
he drives me nuts on this point.
Well, look, all he said was, I don't mind staying home. Could you imagine?
Well, this statement, yes.
Could you imagine if one of your buddies was chatting with you on like Sunday night, mm-hmm. and you said, ugh. And I don't know. I think I'm going to stay home tomorrow.
I'm that guy.
yeah. They don't pay me enough to come in on Mondays, Adam.
Uh-uh.
And then the next thing you do is you turn on the news and all the news reports are talking about how you're, you know, facing getting written up by not showing up to work on Monday.
Yeah.
That's the exact thing to me. It's just, he says,
oh, yeah, it's not that big of a deal.
He says, like, I don't mind staying at home, and all of a sudden it's a threat that he's not going to show up for training camp.
Right, right. No, I'm 100%.
It's silly to me.
I'm 100% with you on that. I was just more complaining about his logic of why he needs a new deal.
Yeah, no. And I think he knows at this point that he can talk all he wants. It's not going to happen, but it could happen. It's not going to hurt him.
No. No, I mean,
you know, he's still under contract.
Other than the court of public opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And who gives a crap?
Is Michael Bennett a guy that cares about public
opinion?
No,
and I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'll see. I've ripped him how many pods on this. I'm sure he doesn't care.
He has not knocked on your door,
no.
despite me saying
no.
that you live on Jupiter.
Yeah, exactly. No. Exactly. It's hard to get there.
Exactly.
Yeah, a lot of gravity.
All right, Adam. Well, I think that covers kind of this week of news. And
yeah.
Yeah, I say we get to this interview with Oscar from Better Rivals
Sounds
Podcast. This week on the Seahawkers podcast, we welcome on Oscar from the Better Rivals podcast. They focus on the San Francisco 49ers. And one of the great things about their show, and we've had Oscar on before. In fact, the last time Oscar was on was when we were previewing the Seahawks, Niners, and the NFC Championship mm-hmm. game. And Adam, you weren't here for that.
I was not.
But you're here now. And Oscar is joining us on the show. So thanks for coming on, Oscar.
No problem. It's definitely my pleasure.
Well, one of the things that I like about your show, Oscar, and aside from recommending your show to other 49ers fans, is the idea that, you guys talk about some things on your show that I guess for the real diehard sports nerds that really like to know, you know, why plays develop in a certain way and why certain coverages work better against certain offensive schemes. And you guys take a look at that on your show.
Yeah, that's right. That's where the name comes from, right? It's the Better Rivals podcast, and everyone goes, "Don't you mean Bitter Rivals?" And I go, "No, it's called a pun. It's the Better Rivals podcast, and it's because the end goal of the podcast is just to make you a better rival, really, in any football conversation. Because, you know, with the rise of the Skip Baylesses of the Stephen A. Smiths of the world, you've got, you know, people who are like, "Ah, hot take, blah," and that's all you get, you know, a lot of the time, and on repeat on ESPN and on repeat on NFL Network to a certain degree. But we want to basically take a look at the game, and we, both David and I, my co-host, think that it's a really beautiful game, and we look at it and we watch it and we go, "Man, why did that work? I think that's really awesome." And that was kind of the impetus behind starting the show, was, you know, to say, so why does that happen? I don't know. Let's take a look. And we both geek out on advanced stats and breaking down some tape and some film, and we're by no means as good as some of the, like, the legit experts out there, like Chris Brown from Smart Football. But we definitely try and take a more of an analytical approach to the game and say, you know, if something is working or if something is not working, why is it or why is it not? You know, when it comes to the Seahawks, it's like, okay, so why is the cover three so freaking effective? Even though it's a relatively, you know, all things considered, simple defensive package. You know, and if you're going to cover three, and it may sound simple, but the Niners simple can't, you know, it's not like the Niners are going to beat it or anything. But, you know, when they run that cover three, it's like, okay, so if they're running a cover three, how do you beat that? What do you do to beat it? And what can the Niners do in order to kind of see them get over that hump? So that's kind of how we try and approach the game. And we have a lot of fun with it. And we think that our listeners do too.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why we're kind of this offseason. As you know, this is like the most dead time of the year for NFL football, and about the worst time to actually be following the news, because you get just the worst stories imaginable, people just making up scenarios and reporting on it as if it's news. And so this is a good time of year for, I think, I enjoy listening to all of our NFC West rival podcasts just to kind of get an idea of what's going on the rival team. So I do appreciate you coming on so we could talk about that.
Well, and with that said, let's take kind of a broad picture. You talked about getting into the technical things a lot, Oscar. This has been an offseason of a lot of change for the 49ers. How are you feeling overall? Like, just give me kind of your broad feeling after seeing the Niners go through so much change.
So I think so much change might be the understatement of the millennium.
All the change.
Yeah, all of the change. Basically, if anything could happen to a franchise, it happened to the 49ers. I mean, I love soccer, and the Women's World Cup's going on right now. And I had a podcast listener post on our podcast pages. I said, you know, it's a great week for America. Let's close it out with the Women's World Cup win. And he said, and a 49er hasn't retired this week. Right. My only reply was, don't jinx it. Because we are in full Tyson zone. Like, there is, I don't know if you guys listen to Bill Simmons.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. The Niners were in full Tyson zone. Well, it got to the point where when Anthony Davis retired, I wasn't even shocked. I was just like, well, next man up. At some point, you just become numb to it. And I was a huge Harbaugh supporter. I love Jim Harbaugh. The man is certifiably crazy. That's just an undeniable fact. He is crazy. But he's still a dang good football coach. And so, you know, yes, in general, I feel as numb as you can feel when you're a fanatic of a team, which sounds kind of weird, right? Because I'm sitting here in my office and I've got my signed Steve Young jersey from the 95 Super Bowl, you know, sitting right behind me. And, you know, I love the team and I want them to do well. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, let's see how far this rabbit hole goes. So it's this weird kind of like outer body experience, I think, with the team, where you're almost expecting bad things to happen at this point, but at the same time, you don't want them to happen.
How crazy is it that 95 was like 20 years ago?
Dude, don't remind me.
Is that not insane?
Here, yeah, a friend asked me the other day, they're like, so you're like, you know, how old? You're like 33. I'm like, hold on, I lost count. Yeah, that's about right, 33.
Yeah, people listening to your show that don't remember the last Super Bowl win for the Niners.
I know. I have a brother who's younger than me by quite a bit. He's 14 years younger than me. So he was born in 95. He was born in September of 95, and he's a Niner fan too, because I'd disown him as a brother if he wasn't. and he, like, he's never, like, the Harbaugh era was the height of his fandom thus far. I mean, he basically grew up watching the team during the what I call the decade of darkness, where, you know, Ken Dorsey was a starter for the 49ers. You know, Cody Pickett. Cody who? Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Cody the Cowboy Pickett, right? And remember, JT O'Sullivan, just turn it over. I mean, Mike Martz rolled with JT O'Sullivan as a starter for
a couple.
It was bad, dude. It was real, real bad. So yeah, it's pretty wild that a lot of fans don't know what, you know, what winning actually feels like on a consistent basis. And yeah, that can definitely easily get lost.
So you said that, you know, there's a stretch of time there where things kind of went sideways and it didn't go real well. This kind of feels like a total rebuild in a sense for the 49ers in a lot of ways. And I said, you know, a lot of change. You said that was an understatement. So in this complete dismantlement of the 49ers, out of all the things that have changed, what is the biggest one to you? What is the thing that you think will have either the best, the most positive impact or the most negative impact?
You know, honestly, I think it's the firing of Jim Harbaugh. And Jed Yorkin called it a mutual parting only once, but we all know it was a firing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how closely I'll follow it, but Jim Harbaugh's, I think it was his son, actually tweeted out like a couple of games before the end of the season that his dad wouldn't be returning after, you know, the end of the year. So, and as we've learned, that's exactly what happened. After the Seattle game, they told him he wouldn't be retained, and he coached the last two or three games out knowing he wasn't coming back.
Yeah.
And that was, to me, even as a fan of the team, it seems very much like a young owner who was having a bit of an ego battle with a very, very tough coach. And I say that Jim Harbaugh is certifiably crazy. I do believe he was certifiably crazy. Like, I can't imagine a man's an easy guy to work with, right? But at the same time, you think of the, you know, when you look at the great franchise that was the 49ers in the 80s, Eddie DeBartolo fired Bill Walsh like 7 times.
Yeah.
And Carmen, and it was always like, you know, Eddie DeBartolo would get drunk and he was a hothead and he would be like, you know, screw this guy and F this and F that. And, you know, he fired him several times. And that's one of the reasons why Bill Walsh walked away when he did. Bill Walsh said that walking away early was one of his biggest regrets. And it was because it wore down on him. And I feel, but Carmen Policy was there, right?
Yeah.
Policy was the kind of the buffer. And he said, you know what, Eddie, calm down, go, you know, like sleep it off or whatever. Bill, it's all right. You know, come back in on Monday, even if you don't think you should. And it all worked out to the tune of 3 Super Bowls. I don't know that Jed York had that guy.
Right.
And I don't know that the ego clash that was those two ever really melded. And I'm sure Jim did things that weren't all that great. And Jed just couldn't handle it because he was young. And he's my age. He's like 2 years older than me. Right. And he's running a $1 billion enterprise. You know, and so I can't imagine that went well. But that's the biggest
ego involved there, I think.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, of course.
Or he's going full on Al Davis.
Yeah, right. And I mean, he is. He's basically like Jerry Jones is making smart decisions and he's drafting intelligently and he's not overpaying running backs. And Jed York is firing 3-time NFC, like, you know, 2-time NFC championship winning, 1-time going coaches. The world is upside down. You know, up is down, left is right. Our pets' heads are falling off. You know, like it's just, it's crazy. But I think that's the biggest change, right? And it will either be the biggest thing for the positive or negative. Either Jim Tomsula is going to bring in a coaching staff that really is going to do kind of the exact opposite of Jim Harbaugh, where it will be about the player and the person and not about exacting precision and beating you silly. And it doesn't matter if you know we're going to run. We're going to run with 3,000 pounds of beef on one side of the line. Like, Jim Harbaugh was an obvious man. You knew what he was going to do. It just so happened that for a couple of years, he had the talent to just say, we're better than you. I don't know that he ever really got the chance to adjust that. And so I think that's going to be the biggest change, you know, is whether or not the coaching was the issue, whether the locker room atmosphere was an issue, or whether or not, you know, it was something else. Maybe the problem runs deeper, but I think that's the thing that's the biggest impact, or will have the biggest impact moving forward.
I think what Seahawks fans want to know, Oscar, is are we going to be able to dislike Jim Tomsula as much as we dislike the other Jim?
Oh, heck no. Not have a bad bone. I know, right? Like, I mean, you have to remember that for all of his, you know, rumbling, bumbling, stumbling during his opening press conference,
The guy is like, you know, he's like, oh yeah, and like Judy from Payroll. I don't even know if that's her real name, but like he's talking about janitors and payroll people, and he's like, he's all about, you know, it's the person first. Like, one of the things that I thought was interesting was he changed the way the meetings work, where now instead of having like 2 or 3 hour long meetings, they're doing 30-minute blocks of meetings. And every 30 minutes, you get, you know, 10 minutes to check your phone, take a phone call, send a text. But outside of those 30-minute blocks, you're locked in. Like, I need your attention for 30 straight minutes. But then after that, do whatever you want. Play Candy Crush, you know, check scores, whatever. And what's interesting is that that's actually the way human brains work, generally, more often than not. And it's how millennial brain works. And so I don't know if he intuitively understood that, or if he's got some mad scientist on the staff that's like, hey, Chip Kelly does this, we should do it too. But you know, it's those things where it's like he really is genuinely looking out for the players and their well-being. And you can't dislike a guy for that, regardless of how much chest hair he's showing.
Oh, I can. I'll tell you straight up. When I read that story about him letting the players take cell phone breaks, I literally went off on the show last week about this. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. How do you coddle a player any more than that? A millennial can't sit down for 2 dang hours without his phone and just figure it out and like pay attention. Are you serious?
Oh,
like, come on, man.
You're
going to
sit there. Oh, come on. Pete Carroll is like Mr. He's like Mr. Do It Your Own Way.
That's true. That's true. They may take a surf break somewhere in there.
I'm going to sit here and chew some gum, and I'm going to be like, you just do it your way. You do you, man. You do you. I know that I'm like 97 years old, but you do you.
Suddenly Pete Carroll's from Jersey.
Yeah.
Hey, man, it's my head coach influencing me all the way.
I feel you. One thing about Tom Sula, though, is that he's a defensive-oriented coach. And Jim Harbaugh was supposedly an offensive, you know, oriented coach. And I think with the Niners, we saw over the last few years, the strong side of the ball was by far the defense, and the offense would go through its times of struggles.
Yep.
Do you think having a defensive man be the head coach now is the right move for this franchise?
You know, it's interesting. We did a study a couple of months ago when we knew that Harbaugh was out. And, you know, we're like, okay, do we want an offensive guy or a defensive guy coming in based on the performance of offensive or defensive coaches in recent NFL history? And what we found was, you know, my preference was for an offensive guy. And you know, what we found was that there wasn't a huge difference between whether a defensive-oriented guy or an offensive-oriented guy came in. And that's even removing Bill Belichick, because we kind of removed him from the study. Because to call Bill Belichick a defensive guy or an offensive is almost an insult to Bill Belichick, right? Like, the guy's he's absurd.
Yeah, he's the Dark Lord. Like, you just got to leave him out.
Yeah. Like, he's everything and nothing all at the same time. Like, when he dies, it's just going to be like a puff of smoke, and it's just going to go into the ether or something. But it, you know, and there is a slight preference towards offensive coaches, but not such, though, in terms of winning percentage, that it was any kind of clear indicator that, you know, you should indeed, you know, choose one or the other. The only thing that we found that was a clear indicator in that article that we ended up posting up on Niners Nation was that the coaches that made it a leap from a position coach to a head coach generally didn't do well. And that's scary, obviously, because Tom Sula is a defensive line coach. And so that in and of itself is scary. Sure. But the other thing that kind of counters that is that the coaches that are going into their second stint usually do better in that second stint than they do in their first stint. And that's what I think people forget or kind of throw under the rug, is that Tom Sula was a head coach in NFL Europe. And yeah, you can say what you want about NFL Europe and whatnot, but I do think that head coaching experience matters. So, you know, all that to say that I don't know that Tom Sula is necessarily going to fall into the defensive or offensive camp. He reminds me, and this is probably because I went to Texas, he reminds me a little bit of Mack Brown. Mack Brown, for those of you who are familiar with college football, was basically the epitome of the CEO coach. He was a guy who knew offense and knew defense, right? Because you have to when you get to the head coaching level. But he wasn't the guy who was going to get his hands dirty every single day, other than setting the philosophy and the way the program kind of ran. And there are coaches who do that. John Harbaugh is very, very similar to that. And John Harbaugh's been very, very successful in Baltimore as well. So when you think, you know, is it going to be, you know, defense or offense? I don't think that Tom Sula will kind of hang his hat on the same thing that Jim Harbaugh did, which is, I'm an offensive guy, I'm going to run this modified West Coast, you know, kind of Bo Schembechler system. I think that Tom Sula is going to establish the system and set the philosophy and then let his coaches coach.
And that's going to be, I think, a little bit of an interesting departure on the offensive side. On the defensive side, Vic Fangio used to run that thing by himself. So we'll see what Eric Mangini does. But it sounds like a slight departure, but I think it's going to be, again, going back to what the most important thing is going to be this offseason, the thing that's going to be the most interesting thing to play out is, have we been able to get a coaching staff as good as the one that we had under Jim Harbaugh? Because for all of Harbaugh's craziness, he did assemble a damn good coaching staff.
Well, and one of those guys that's kind of sticking around is the quarterback's coach, and who's been promoted. Now, I can imagine that 49ers fans, there's a lot of them that aren't too sad to see offensive coordinator Greg Roman leave. but do you feel like, you know, promoting within and having that familiarity with Colin Kaepernick and the quarterback coach on the offensive side of the football, is that going to help the team?
You know, I think it will help, and I think it will help because whenever you have any kind of offensive continuity, it can only help. You look at the things that really damage quarterbacks, and Alex Smith being the prime example, right? He had like 97 offensive coordinators in 97 days.
Right.
It was really like 6 in 6 years, but still, you want someone who knows what a player is good at, what they can do, what they can't do, because that helps you tailor the offense. And the terminology is going to be somewhat different. It's going to be mostly similar. But, you know, the thing with having someone who knows what the problem spots were the previous year is already showing. What have the Niners been working on? Getting in and out of the huddle quickly. I know, sounds revolutionary, but that probably cost the Niners a Super Bowl. If the Niners were able to run the play that they wanted to on second down, it would have been a draw to Frank Gore. And he would have walked into the end zone. But instead, Jim Harbaugh runs down the field, calls a timeout because the play clock was running down to zero. They end up then throwing an incomplete pass and then an incomplete fade, and they lose a Super Bowl. So I would argue that getting in and out of the huddle cost them a Super Bowl, and it's cost them, you know, some penalties in key moments in games.
Sure.
And so when you have someone who's like, you know what? We know that this is an issue. We know what we need to do. We're going to pare down the language. We're going to make the language easier, even if we're not making the plays easier. And I know what concepts you do well, so let's build that into a slightly different kind of package. I do think that will help. Whether or not that translates into success on the field, I don't know. But I think it will help more than it will hurt.
How do you feel about Kaepernick going into this year?
I actually feel pretty good about him, and that's not just because I'm a Niner fan, but it's because I think that most people, unfortunately, don't take a nuanced view of the quarterback position. Most people treat the quarterback position as a dichotomy. Either you are Peyton Manning or you are Blaine Gabbert, and that's not the way quarterbacking works in the NFL. I'm a big fan of the Andy Dalton line. If you have a quarterback that's better than Andy Dalton, you can win a championship with them. It might not be pretty, but you can win a championship with them. If you've got a quarterback worse than Andy Dalton, you probably need to find a new quarterback. And there are degrees up from Andy Dalton, right? You can win a quarterback with a Trent Dilfer who's just above a Dalton line. You can win a championship with, you know, quarterbacks that aren't Peyton Manning and aren't Tom Brady, but are still good when everything else falls in around them. And that's where I think Colin Kaepernick is right now. He's definitely not elite. And you don't need to argue that he will or won't be elite in the future. All you need to say is, you know what? Based on where he is right now, he's better than Andy Dalton. He is battle tested. He can win on the road. He can win tough games in the playoffs, which is exactly what you want. And does he make some mistakes that prevent him from being, you know, elite and amazing? Absolutely. But if you give him a good defense, if you give him some other dynamic pieces, can he tear people apart? Absolutely. And he doesn't need to be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady in order to take the 49ers far. It's the same thing with Russell Wilson to a certain degree. Russell Wilson is not elite. I would say he's better than Colin Kaepernick. Yes, he's got, I think, better accuracy, better touch on the ball, and he's got better pocket presence. But is he elite by any stretch? No. I don't think that winning a
totally
ring...
Totally argue that point with you.
Yeah.
But we can move on.
No, it's fine. And we can. I think that he's a very, very good quarterback. But I don't think that winning a ring makes you elite. I think he does a lot of really, really wonderful things that work well with the way Seattle is built as a team. And I do think they should pay the dude because finding quarterbacks like that is really, really difficult. And I think that's the other thing that people miss about Colin Kaepernick. I was like, oh, get rid of him. He's a bum. And play who? Right. Blaine Gabbert?
Nope.
Right? Like, who are you going to find? It's not like quarterbacks that are as dedicated as Colin Kaepernick and as, you know, kind of hardworking as Colin Kaepernick grow on trees. They don't.
Look at the Jamarcus Russells and the Ryan Leafs. You know, look at all of these players. Hell, look at RG3, who's more concerned with, you know, Subway commercials than he is with actually learning an NFL playbook. Yeah. You don't grow these quarterbacks on trees, irrespective of talent. And so, you know, do I think Colin Kaepernick is elite? No. Do I think the Niners can win a championship with him? Yes. And do those two things need to, like, happen in order for the Niners to win a championship? No, not at all. If he continues to regress, then yeah, sure. I think he considered drafting someone and grooming them. But I think that he is taking the things that he needs to do in order to get better. And that's all you can ask for a quarterback who's already won several road playoff games.
Well, and that's the reason why I asked the question I did about Kaepernick, because there is all that talk about how he regressed last year. And I want to know if that was more of the team asking him to do things he wasn't prepared to do, or if it just wasn't using him to his strengths.
Well, so that's an interesting question. And I think and the question I asked our podcast listeners a little while back is, would you take 2 years of, you know, 8-8, 9-7, 7-9 for 3 years after that of 12 wins? Mm-hmm. And I asked that because Colin Kaepernick, when you look at collegiate athletes, you know, this is why those people who are like, you know, oh, I wonder if Alabama could beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. No. Jacksonville would smash Alabama.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Alabama might have like 3 or maybe 5 or maybe even 11 NFL caliber players. Jacksonville has 53.
Right.
And all of them were the best player on their college team.
Right.
So, you know, and so it's not even close, right? And that's where I feel like, you know, when you think of, you know, was he being used to his strengths? I think that he was used to running away from people. He was used to one read, two read, gotta go. And he could do that because he was physically superior to most everyone else on that field. He can't do that in the NFL. He can to a certain degree, but he can't do that all of the time. And so what he tried to do this year, I think, and the reason why we think he regressed is because he basically said, I'm going to stay in the pocket. I'm going to make a concerted effort to stay in the pocket. And I think Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman made that strategic decision. And they said, we're going to have you stay in the pocket. We're going to have you learn how to be more of a pocket passer. Even if it means we win less games or you throw up less flashy stats, we think you're at the point now where you can develop the pocket presence, where you can begin to read more of the field. But then what happened was the offensive line turned into Swiss cheese, and he basically reverted to, God, I'm getting, you know, Jonathan Martin over here, who's basically a human wet tissue. And this, you know, defensive end is coming at me. Gotta go. And he would drop his eyes. He would get happy feet. He wouldn't climb the pocket. And that just built on bad habit, on bad habit, on bad habit.
Jonathan Martin, a wet tissue? How dare you, you bully?
Oh, I know.
No, dude,
that offensive line was terrible, man. It was real bad. I mean, 52 sacks or whatever it was, you know, it was bad. Really was. And Cap started, what worries me the most about Colin Kaepernick is that he's got to break out of the David Carr syndrome. And David Carr syndrome is when you get hit so often because your offensive line is terrible that you start feeling phantom pressure and you just start basically taking a seat when like a second and a half after the ball gets snapped, because you know you're going to get hit anyway. Why bother?
Right.
Or like David Carr was a good talent that got scared into playing scared. And I don't think that Cap will ever really play scared, but you can really affect his mechanics if you put any kind of pressure on him. And so that's why I say that, like, you know, would I be okay with Colin Kaepernick trying really hard for 2 years to be a pocket passer and not running if it meant that his ceiling was going to be higher 2 or 3 years from now? You know, I don't know. But I think that's the growth that Colin Kaepernick is needing to encounter right now. Do I continue to rely on my legs and continue to rely on the veer and the zone read, you know, and even the inverted veer to a certain degree? Or do I try and become more of a true pocket passer and take, you know, Bill Walsh's words to heart, which is exhaust every option, right? That's what Bill Walsh told Steve Young. He said, you know, why did you run? You ran too early. It's not until you come off your fourth receiver that then maybe you think about running.
That's a good point. Now, you had mentioned the Dalton line, and that if you have a guy that's a little better or above the Dalton line with the right personnel around you, you can win a Super Bowl. Now, you look at the offense this year, and there's obviously been some major changes, especially in the backfield with Frank Gore leaving. And yep. In the receiving core as well, Crabtree being gone and bringing in Torrey Smith and Simpson. How do you feel about
the personnel changes that have been made on the offense this year, and how do you think that's going to complement Kaepernick's skill sets?
You know, I actually think we upgraded our wide receiver core this offseason. While I do actually, no, that's not even true. I can't even say that I like Michael Crabtree all that much. I liked him for a bit just because he was a Niner, but I'm a Texas fan, and he put the Texas championship cards. Yeah, when he was at Texas Tech, after Blake Gideon dropped that stupid interception, gross. but I think that, you know, basically what you had last year was you had your top three receivers as the same exact type of receiver at different stages of their career. Like Michael Crabtree is going to grow up to be Stevie Johnson, who's going to grow up to be Anquan Boldin. Like that they are all the same player. And so now you actually have a complementary skill set in wide receivers. You've got someone like a Torrey Smith, who we know complements Anquan Boldin really well because that's how they won the Super Bowl in 2012. You've got Jerome Simpson, who's just freakishly athletic and has a long stride. I mean, we all remember the play where he, you know, front flipped over a defender and scored a touchdown and stuck the landing like a gymnast. And then you've got Quentin Patton and Bruce Ellington, who are going to be more of the underneath kind of slot wiggle guys, more so Bruce Ellington being a slot guy than Quentin Patton, but Quentin Patton definitely capable of doing that. He ran a pretty wide open offense at Louisiana Tech, both fourth round receivers. And then you've got, you know, the guy from Alabama who is getting rave reviews, who ran a 4.3 40, who the only reason he didn't go drafted is because he was injured. His name is DeAndre, and I think it's DeAndre Smith. We have like three undrafted wide receivers named DeAndre on our team. So, you know, I think that on the whole, even though we lost a name, I think overall the wide receiver core got better. And how does that fit Colin's skill set? I think it fits it pretty well. Colin Kaepernick is a really, really good deep passer when he has time and when he has a guy who can get open. You know, you think of the way that he busted on the scene in Chicago in 2012. And I mean, he was basically throwing dimes to Vernon Davis left and right. You know, it was absurd. It was really good. And that 2012 year, he had the best deep passing completion percentage in the NFL. The only reason that he doesn't, you know, have one of the records or is up there in the stats is because he didn't have as many attempts as he needed to in order to qualify. He had like 184 attempts and he needed like 200 or something like that. But he completed an absurd amount of deep passes that year. And that's what that kind of, you know, his deep passes then went down a little bit in 2013 and then down quite a bit in 2014. But that's what he likes to do. He likes to throw it deep. And if they can get that, if Cap can get his groove back on the deep pass with someone like a Torrey Smith, I think it'll be really, really good for him.
So the one side of the ball we haven't really talked about yet is the defensive side. And I kind of want to start with the defensive line because I feel like that's probably where the least amount of impact has happened. Now, Justin Smith retired, which is a huge deal, and Ray McDonald left, but you did bringing in a dude from Arizona.
Dockett. Yep, and then Quentin Dial and Tank Carradine being on the roster.
And drafting defensive line in the first round. I feel like you've kind of filled in behind some of those guys that have left. But then you start to look back, you know, at the linebacking core and the secondary. How are you feeling about the defense just going through kind of those progressions?
Yeah, so the defense has definitely taken some hits. Justin Smith, even at 80%, even as an old dude, is probably still the best defensive lineman on the roster. Like if he were to just come back tomorrow and be like, you know what, sorry guys, just kidding, unretired.
Yeah.
He would be the best defensive lineman on the roster.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy's absurd. I mean, I will always remember his crazy eyes looking for Jermaud Bushrod, like literally going through him after putting him on skates and grabbing Drew Brees in the NFC divisional game and just yanking him down. Like there is some unhuman strength that he has that just came out whenever he was bull rushing that you just can't replicate. And his kind of veteran savviness, I mean, I'm pretty sure that about 25 to 30% of Alden Smith sacks come directly from Justin Smith holds. Mm-hmm. Like it's, I mean, everything that man did was amazing. So the defensive line is not going to be as good as it was last year, at least in the initial goings. But I don't think it's going to be like super duper terrible. I don't think Eric Armstead, who's the rookie, is going to make a huge impact right away. But people forget that, you know, Glenn Dorsey, the only reason he played nose tackle was because he was taking over for Ian Williams. Ian Williams broke his leg. Pretty nasty. Thanks, guys. And that was into last year.
Yeah.
And he is a really, really good nose tackle, and he beat out, you know, lots of people at that nose tackle spot. Then he gets injured. And he was actually someone that Justin Smith named, when he was saying like, this guy, you know, watch for this guy. He's really, really good. He's really underrated. That allows Glenn Dorsey to move out to a defensive end spot, you know, and that allows, you know, Tank Carradine to maybe fill in that five technique. Darnell Dockett is still there, you know, although his specialty is kind of more of the pass rush and not the block. You've got Tony Girardetti, who, you know, now at this point, he went from a rotational player to maybe not even making a roster. You know, and so I think at that point, then it might be a little worse, but all in all, it's not as bad as a lot of people think. I think we still have some talent there to make it work.
So the defensive line, I kind of agree with you on that. The Justin Smith retirement, I thought that was a big deal, but I felt like you guys had a lot of depth and you kind of went through those guys. I think really where I would have concerns as a 49ers fan is in the back end. I mean, specifically at the corner position.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. And this is why I say the 49ers, usually the last couple of years, we've been able to peg them at, you know, 10, 11, maybe 12 wins if everything goes well. This year, if I'm projecting their record just based on talent and scheme and from what I know about the coaches now, they can be anywhere from like a 6-win team, like 6-10, to like 10-6. And that's a pretty wide range in the NFL. They can be basically, you know, at this point, the bottom of the NFC West, or they could be competing for a wild card spot, depending on what happens with Arizona and Carson Palmer, aka Old Man River. So, you know, it's one of those things where the talent is so wide, or the win gap is so wide, because if things go well for the Niners, if Keith Reeser ends up being a great find because he's, you know, another ACL special that Trent Baalke loves to go after, if Sharice Wright actually decides he wants to play football, if Tremaine Brock comes back to form, if Jaquiski Tartt, you know, is actually a great kind of hybrid corner safety that allows us to play more of a 3 or 4 safety look, you can actually see the secondary get better. You look at someone like, I just wrote up an article on Dante Johnson, who was a 4th-round rookie last year, and he actually had more a higher passes defensed rate than Parrish Cox. Now, passes defensed are, I remember reading an article a while back that said, like, you know, what's the best predictor of the quality of a cornerback? And it's not like passer rating when thrown to, it's not number of targets, it's not number of interceptions, it's passes defensed. And that kind of makes a bit of intuitive sense, right? Because a defense pass is like, well, you have to be in position to get your hand on the ball. You have to be able to go with the receiver, you have to be able to follow them, and then you have to actually like make a play, knock the ball away, and not get called for PI, which in today's NFL is no small feat. Mm-hmm. And Dante Johnson's rate was he actually defended a pass once every 8 targets. And you know this guy, Richard Sherman, he defended a pass every 8.1 passes. Uh-huh. So in that regard, Dante Johnson, who kind of had like a down year near the end of the year, he had a horrible game against Arizona because he bit on a couple of fakes by Michael Floyd, who is kind of good at football. You've got a guy who could be good, but you also have a guy whose season comp last year was Leotis McKelvin from Buffalo in 2008. You know, and Leotis McKelvin was...
You don't know Leotis McKelvin? I actually recognize Leotis McKelvin.
Well, you're a Buffalo guy.
Yeah.
Well,
he's a guy who was, he was a first round pick. He drafted 11th overall, had a pretty good, you know, rookie campaign, played in some spot duty, you know, played about 10 games, which is about what Dante Johnson played, but then never kind of got over the hump, never took that performance and turned it into a solid quality every down starter. Yeah. And that's the swing that the Niners are looking at this year. If Dante Johnson pans out, if Tremaine Brock comes back from injury, if Jimmy Ward's foot injury isn't, you know, career limiting, if, you know, Sharice Wright decides that, you know what, I didn't like 73 degrees and sunny in San Diego for 300 days out of the year, but in reality, I like San Francisco, right? Like, if all those things happen, it could be a phenomenal secondary. It could be an underrated secondary. But that's a pretty big if.
A lot of ifs.
Yeah, it is a lot of ifs. And that's, I think, the storyline of the 49ers this year is, if this goes right, if Arik Armstead actually develops, if Glenn Dorsey and Ian Williams can stay healthy, if Dante Johnson can take the next step, if Marcus Cromartie, you know, who's another big guy, 6'1", 95, free agent, if he kind of has the light turn on after 2 years, if Chris Cook, another guy who, is another rangy, lengthy guy, played at Minnesota, if he can actually have a light turn on, then, you're not in a bad spot. But it is a lot of ifs.
No, that's true. Now, so we'll see. I mean, you threw out a lot of names there. There's some guys that I was familiar with and some that I were not as familiar with, so I appreciate some of the info there. So let's talk a little bit. We talked defensive line. We've talked defensive backfield. Let's talk the linebacking core now, because that was once the backbone of this team. I mean, the best linebacking core in the NFL, hands down. No need to argue it. Mm-hmm. But think times have been changing. How do you guys deal with the inside linebacker position at this point, with Willis now gone, Borland now gone? I've heard a little talk of maybe Brooks moving inside. Like, what's kind of the game plan there?
Yeah, so the Brooks moving inside is I would say probably more of a fan rumor than anything else. There are two things working against Ahmad Brooks. One is he wasn't a very good inside linebacker when he played inside linebacker for
minor detail. Yeah.
Yeah. And two is his salary. He is actually probably on the roster bubble simply because his salary is like $6.8 or $7 million this year. It's somewhere around there. Pretty much the only reason he's still on the roster is because everyone decided to retire. And so the linebacking core, and this is where my opinion kind of runs counter to most fans and sports writers' opinion, is I think that on the defense, the linebacker position is probably still the strongest position on the roster.
Interesting.
Even with the retirement of Borland and Patrick Willis. I think that people and 49er fans and people who looked at the Niners were spoiled by having basically a Pro Bowl, you know, defensive rookie or someone who was in contention for defensive rookie of the year in Chris Borland, and having two all pros. You basically have two all pros and someone who might be on the path to being an all pro on a defense where most teams would love to have one all pro. Like, people lose track of the fact that all pros are rare.
Right.
And for one team to have one, two, or three all pros on a defense, let alone at a single position, is a little absurd. And so most teams would kill for one all pro linebacker and then maybe another like pretty good starter. And that's what the Niners came down to. The Niners came down to having an all pro in Navarro Bowman and then having a guy who plays pretty good football in Michael Wilhoit. He doesn't get the accolades, and he's basically an average starter, right? He's not amazing, but he's not bad. And he's actually pretty good in coverage. And then, you know, and you really only need two, maybe three or four of those. You back those up with depth guys who, all things considered, should never see the field, like Desmond Bishop, who, again, shouldn't see the field, probably going to be a special teams depth guy. Nick Moody, probably never going to see the field, going to be a special teams depth guy. And then, you know, Philip Wheeler for some competition in there. And you've got a linebacking core that is on par or, you know, a little better than most of the linebacking cores in the NFL. And we haven't even talked about the outside linebackers, right? Where you have Aaron Lynch, who looks like a clone of Aldon Smith. You know, and then Eli Harold, who I think was an absolute steal in the draft this year, is another guy who can turn into a pass rusher. So you still have a really, really, really strong unit at the linebacking position. And again, the biggest if, we go back to the theme, which is a season of ifs, is as long as the knee of Navarro Bowman holds up, then I think we're totally fine at the linebacker position. If that knee does not hold up, and someone like, you know, the Desmond Bishops of the world and the Nick Moody's of the world have to step in and play at the linebacker spot, then it's pretty much toast. Yeah. But as long as Navarro Bowman's knee holds up, and, you know, for all intents and purposes, it looks like it will, and I'm no doctor, I'm just kind of going off of camp reports, then I think that inside linebacker position is easily still the strongest position on the roster, on the defensive roster.
So we talked a little, you know, obviously offense, defense now, but let's give a little love to special teams, because it is a third of the game, right, Oscar? So, like, Andy Lee departs the team.
Pro Bowl punter.
Because kickers are people, too.
All pro punter.
Yeah. All pro. That's a whole other level up. So how do you feel about that?
That was a full Tyson zone move. That was like, you know what? At this point, why not? Let's right. just blow it all up, you know? And yeah, I'm kind of the opinion that, you know, specialists shouldn't, even though, I mean, you could argue that it is one third of the game, but that's just because there are three phases. I don't think that it is as big of a deal as most people make it out to be. I do think that it was probably a move that was going to happen, but I thought it was going to happen next year. The moment the Niners drafted a punter in the fifth round, I was like, well, Andy Lee better pack his bags, because there's no way that we draft someone in the fifth round just to cut him. Mm-hmm. You don't draft a camp leg in the fifth round. And I think that
it's just one of those things where, you know, Balky is always looking for efficiencies. And when you need to pay people or when you need to sign a lot of people, then, you know, your punter is one of those things that's expendable, especially when their salary approaches, you know, $1.5-2 million, which doesn't sound like a lot, but compared to other punters in the league, it is. If I wish they would take that same outlook with kickers, because I think we've overpaid kickers for a bit. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, in terms of impact moves, I think that Andy Lee is a great punter. He's going to do wonderful things, but I don't think it's going to be the thing that impacts the Niners the most.
Well, Oscar, I wanted to thank you for sticking around so long and going into the amount of depth that you did and taking the time you did with us. Before you head out, I do want to ask you, now, Seahawks fans generally aren't in the business of rooting for particular players on another, especially a 49ers team, but I want to know from you just about a guy on your team. That because Frank Gore, I have to admit, he was one of those guys that on the Niners, yes, you dislike all of them with your
sports hate.
Sports hate, right. Yeah. But he was one of those guys that, you know, you kind of secretly really respect and like. But now that he's gone, is there another guy on the 49ers that could maybe fill that for an opposing team?
You know, that's a really good question. I kind of feel similarly about Marshawn Lynch. Like, and it's not just because he came from Oakland, right? Like, which, yeah. By the way, how'd y'all feel about him rocking that Warriors hat during the old NBA championship?
Yeah, absolutely. That's
hey,
your
we
hometown,
don't have a basketball
man.
Team now, Oscar. So,
yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Oklahoma City.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for bringing it up.
Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah, no, it feels real good on the inside. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
Good.
Got to get your punches in where you can.
Absolutely,
I guess.
Man. Yep.
We might not be winning very many games this year. So, whatever verbal battles I can win, I am all.
Yep. No, take them. Take them now. Yeah. Yep. Hey, look, hey, we've had years like that too. I remember the Jim Moore junior year. Like, that was one of those years where just so brutal.
We
like,
had our Kelly Stauffer and Dan McGuire years. And yep.
Yeah, they can't be winners. No. They can't all be winners.
No, they sure can. You know, I would say, of all players, I would say it's Navarro Bowman. I would say that Navarro Bowman has been a solid player, a good player. And you know, when it comes to kind of the team leadership aspect, he's always been that person who's lifted the team up and been more vocal even than Patrick Willis. And you hate to see all pro talent go to waste because of, you know, a torn knee. You don't want to rob that twilight in its prime. And so I think that, you know, just because of the way he plays, and because I'm of the opinion that, like, you want to play the best and you want to beat the best. And that's why there are Niner fans who are like, oh, I hope Seattle moves like back to the AFC. I'm like, no, this is a great rivalry. Yeah. If I'm going to win, I'm going to win because we beat Seattle. I don't want to run.
That's how I felt about the Niners, you know, coming in the last couple years. And if you were going to be the best, you got to beat the best.
Well, exactly. It's just to go from a division where 7-9 was, you know, winning the division.
Ugh,
and to now have built one of the toughest divisions in football. It's kind of cool.
And see, and that's the thing with the Niners. I do see it's going to be kind of a struggle year, but it's less of a fact that, I mean, there are obviously a lot of change and the talent level is a little different, but I think it's a less of that and more the fact that I think the Rams got significantly better, and we saw the Cardinals be pretty darn good last year. And you know, obviously the Hawks going all the way to the Super Bowl. So I think just the division toughness, the strength of the teams in it, I think that's what's going to make it hard on the Niners through a big transition year. More so than maybe the talent level itself.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, you're at the point now where even if the Niners, you know, kind of reach the max that they can reach this year, which I think would be 10-6, that still might be third in the division.
Sure.
And you could easily imagine a scenario where that's third in the division. I mean, shoot, the Rams, I think, would have won. If they would have won like one more game, they would have won, I think, like one of the divisions this year, and our third place team would have won like four of the divisions.
Right.
You know, it's absurd. It is the best division in football, even with the Niners taking a slight step back. You know, and I think the Rams are probably still going to have another 8-8, 9-7 year. It is Jeff Fisher after all. You give him a Ferrari, he drives at 40 miles an hour. Let's just get away.
Yeah.
That's what Jeff Fisher does. But I do think that it is still the best division in football. And so when I think of, you know, storylines and what do you want to do, I think that it's going to be Navarro Bowman.
And I think it's going to be one of those things where it's like, yeah, I hope that your career isn't over, and I hope that you can get back to the level that you were at. You know, because at the end of the day, you don't want that to happen to players.
Well, Oscar, really want to thank you for coming on the show, spending as much time as you did, and
really appreciate it.
Look forward to the NFL season coming up.
Yeah, no worries. It's my pleasure. I'm always happy to be on, and I know we interact on Twitter every now and again, and it's always fun because I do obviously. I think dislike the Seahawks is again another understatement.
Sports hate.
Yeah, but it's sports hate. At the end of the day, it's still fun. It's right. Fun to have a rival. It's fun to have games that matter throughout the middle of the year. It's fun to talk a little smack, right? But at the end of the day, it's all still fun. It's not like actual real aggressiveness.
Right.
Very true. Well, with that said, go Hawks.
With that said, I'm going to go ahead and say that Russell Wilson shouldn't take the Crisco off his jersey. it's going to be a really good year. And I'm glad that the only pass in 109 attempts from the 1 yard line to be intercepted was the one that Russell Wilson.
You would.
Oscar, we share now in that brotherhood of disappointing goal line passes.
Yes, yes. It hurts. It hurts. It doesn't go away.
No.
I realize that.
Yeah.
You just have Trust to me. Accept it.
Now looking back 3 years on, still hurts.
Still hurts. Uh-huh. Yeah, good. I'm glad to know that this is never going to change. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Got to get those punches in where you can.
Absolutely.
Thanks again.
And hey, it's scrappy at this point.
Yeah.
You got to try and make it better than Pacquiao Mayweather, right?
Yeah.
That's true. Not hard.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
All right, Oscar. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Oscar from Better Rivals Podcast for coming on the show. Appreciate all the insight he had on the Niners this offseason.
Good dude. A very good dude. Now, one thing I want to do quickly, just for those who aren't listeners of the Bill Simmons BS report.
Yeah, he brought up the Tyson zone, right?
Right, the Tyson
zone. And I'm not a listener of the Bill Simmons, so I did have this question after we got done with the interview.
So here is the definition of the Tyson zone. The point at which a celebrity's behavior becomes so insane that there's literally nothing they could do that would any longer shock or surprise you, or indeed any human being. And basically,
like a face tattoo.
Well, so here it goes. It's like, so here's a few examples.
Is this
about
Mike
Tyson.
Tyson? Is
yes,
this,
okay. About Mike Tyson. Yes, the former boxer. So the heavyweight boxer, the list of things that he had done. One, married a semi-famous TV star at the time. Two, alleged to have abused said wife. Three, divorced. Four, chewed off the ear of another boxer during a match. Five, received a facial tattoo. And six, owns and tends to his pigeons on top of his rooftop in a New York apartment building. So that is the Tyson zone.
There you go. Well, yeah. See, I thought it was important that the face tattoo come in there.
Yeah, definitely. And they said that among numerous other things. I mean, go ahead and check it out. So, yeah, that's the Tyson zone.
So one thing we didn't get to in the news, Adam, was kind of an important article that I thought that came out from Nate Boyer on Monday Morning Quarterback. And partially, the reason why I wanted to talk about it is because it was focused around this piece of video, Adam.
Do it! Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday, you said tomorrow. So just do it! Make your dreams come true! Just do it! Some people dream of success while you're going to wake up and work hard at it. Nothing is impossible! You should get to the point where anyone else would quit, and you're not going to stop there. No, what are you waiting for? Do it! Just do it! Yes, you can! Just do it! If you're tired of starting over, stop giving up.
Do you feel sufficiently motivated, Adam?
I'm sufficiently motivated to tell Shia LaBeouf to get out of the national consciousness. Just do it. My Lord. Like, okay, I saw the headline. All right.
Uh-huh.
And I have mad respect for Nate Boyer. I do. But the headline was he was inspired by Shia LaBeouf. And I went, oh. Now, this guy is a Green Beret and he could kill me with his pinky.
Yeah.
But
it's true.
I do need to make fun of the man a little bit for this because, man, like, I understand the message. The message I get.
The message is if you just listen to the message or read the words.
I'm fine. But where it falls apart for me, it, what you can't see, so look up the video, is his weird, like, flexing as he does it. Like, it looks like he's trying to pinch a loaf off. Like, why he's trying to get it to come out. He's like, just do it.
I feel like it's the motivational speaker from Chris Farley.
The man down by the river. Exactly.
Doesn't it seem like that?
Exactly. And I live in a van down by the river.
See, the best thing about this thing, though, is the fact that Shia LaBeouf did it up against a green screen. And then it just spread virally throughout, and you can see everybody's videos that they've done now. Photoshopping him in to movies like Star Wars, as Luke's trying to raise the
right. But it was almost like he had Nike Tourette's, he couldn't stop yelling, "Just do it."
Well, maybe they sponsored this ad. You
think? Oh man! Oh, just not good.
Well, the important part about the and why he was pointing to it, he was kind of saying to people who were poking fun at Shia LaBeouf to actually listen to the message and realize that.
I did both.
It's kind of motivate him a little bit because it's he's at the point where he. Who would have thought that you could make it as far as Nate Boyer has on his entire
Shia LaBeouf.
Journey? Well, exactly.
Because he got a lot further than he ought to have just based on his
Because he's actually doing things. And I think that's the main point of his article, Adam, is that he didn't think, oh, that would be kind of neat to do. It would be neat, just because somebody told me I can't go to Darfur, it means that, I'll just stay at home. But no, you should read this article for just the lengths that he went to get overseas and to do what he did and how that kind of inspired him to go further and join the military. And
he's lived an interesting life.
And it hasn't ended there. It's only gotten more interesting. It seems.
So far, so good. So far, so good. But yeah, I didn't need Shia. I didn't need that. Although I will say the one line that I did like in that entire thing. Was if you're tired of starting over, stop quitting.
Yeah,
I did like that.
It is. That's how it ends.
Yeah.
So I do kind of like that too.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on.
So we're gonna skip over emails this week.
Yes.
Because I enjoyed the heck out of the mailbag.
Yes.
Last week, and so we're gonna run that. We're gonna do that again.
Go back to the mailbag next week.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we had a few emails, and so we'll.
Dave Blomquist, Hong Kong Hawk.
What, right?
Yeah, he had kind of he took exception to the idea that we just might be reviewing video games and 80s movies.
Took exception?
Yeah, he didn't like that idea.
Well, we're not going to be just doing that. I'm just saying, like, if we have to throw it in for a week, I'm sorry. Change the CBA so the players are doing something, so we have something to talk about then.
You know what he did though? He broke down some of his favorite Hawks games of all time, Russell Wilson era. I think maybe even pre Matt Hasselbeck era. I might have to post that as a blog to our Seahawkers podcast page.
Cool. All right.
Just so people can check that out.
But yeah, no, we're just looking for ideas.
Spend some time on it.
We're just looking for ideas.
So yeah, not a lot of email this week. I did want to get in a couple comments just because we did get one quick comment from Matt in Seattle. Just said, thanks for the great work on the podcast. Love the show. Go Hawks.
Thanks, man.
That came in from the website. And then we got a review this week too.
Saw that. Yeah.
Best Seahawks podcast from KJohns24029. If you love the Seattle Seahawks, then this is a must listen. These guys know the Hawks and get into all the need to know news. Like they say, for 412s by 12s.
Oh, very good. He's obviously paying attention. So yeah, no, appreciate that, man.
Indeed.
So much. Really great.
So what do you say we get into some Do Better and Better at Life, Adam?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a show without it.
Just so people know, we're holding the emails till next week.
We will.
You know,
we're going to read them. We're not just going to...
Exactly. Right. Okay, I just want to make sure that people do.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
We got them.
On to Do Betters.
On to Do Better.
All right.
I think you...
I'm going to roll here.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah.
Are you?
I'm doing this.
Are you?
Really.
Okay.
Yeah. So my Do Better this week... is for Russell Wilson hater numero uno in the sports media. And he looks like a bulldog on top of all of that. If I'm thinking of his silly face at the same time. Yep, nope, that's the guy.
That's the guy.
It's for none other than CBS Sports Pete Prisco. You know,
I think this could be we may be approaching a record for this could be the Do Better segment brought to you by Pete Prisco.
Oh my gosh. I mean we've integrated Skip Bayless into our Better at Life like thing. Maybe we
if
need
something
to...
Pete Prisco better just hope to heck that nothing happens to Skip Bayless, because
right.
if Skip Bayless were to somehow...
He's our backup.
Pete Prisco, he is in the two-hole. You are on deck, Prisco.
So Pete Prisco did this whole article about most overrated and underrated players in the league, and one of his choices for the Seattle Seahawks might not shock you. It was our own Russell Carrington Wilson.
Wow.
And he said, my choice for the league's most overrated player is Seattle Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson. Just kidding.
But
so,
he's top 10.
So everything else that he just said before, like, yeah, yeah. But he is his team's most overrated player. He's good, not great. People want to make him great. The Seahawks obviously agree, since they haven't paid him the big money deal he wants so badly.
That's obviously it, Adam.
They haven't Playing paid right him the big money hand. Deal, Pete, because it's a negotiation, you moron. And he's just good. Not great. Really? Really? No other player in the history of the NFL has been to two Super Bowls in their first 3 years. Nobody has won more games in the first 3 years of their career. Nobody had thrown more touchdown passes in the first 3 years of their career.
Overrated. Sounds like an overrated player that you're talking about.
You know what's overrated? Your bald head. You know what? You, just like Shia LaBeouf, should disappear from the national consciousness. Just do it, okay? And on top of that, do better. I hate this guy. I really do.
I can tell.
It's not sports hate. It's journalism hate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit different.
He's just ignorant. He's just ignorant when it comes to the greatness of Russell Carrington.
I don't know if it's ignorant or just branding yourself in a way that approaches Skip Bayless level. Like, he is following the Skip Bayless branding handbook as to how to be seen as one of the, you know,
controversial, more, yeah. Get your name in the headlines. Understood. But what I can't handle is when you pick out things that are blatantly false to do that.
Isn't that what Skip does?
Yeah, that's what Skip does. But, I mean, you can also... There have been people who are sensationalists that take things that are true facts and then run with them and blow them up and, you know, maybe make them into a bigger deal. That I can handle a little bit more.
Well, true facts. I mean, they're facts, right?
Right, exactly. That I can... Exactly. This is always based on just his wrong opinion. Double catfish to you, Pete Prisco. I don't like you.
Well, it's going to be a Russell Wilson-centric do better, Adam.
Yes.
Because mine is for Mike Florio.
Oh, who gosh. Said, another gem.
Yes, Russell Wilson leaving Seattle in 2016 is a real possibility.
Not to be
Adam.
Outdone by CBS, the NBC Sports website, no, Pro Football Talk had to get there into.
They got
to
get there. I like on Reddit how everything comes with a Pro Football Talk warning. Like
yes.
Pro
yes.
Football Talk warning and then the headline.
That's
and it's
fair.
Like, don't click on this, but know that it's out there.
Yep.
And that's what this is.
That's
Mike
fair.
Florio. He says, surely he wants to be the highest paid player in the NFL, and he almost surely will be, at least until Andrew Luck or someone else sets the ever-rising bar even higher. But then he goes on to say...
Is that how it works?
Well, I... Clearly.
Oh, I was lost in that. I can't believe that, like, one player signs, and then another player signs a couple years later, another player signs, and it just keeps going up. I didn't know that's how it worked.
That's, yeah, you've seen it happen, so he's just stating
so
the
confusing.
Obvious. So, the thing, though, is that he goes on to break down... The possibilities for the Seahawks to actually trade Russell Wilson and how they could applying the exclusive franchise tag would be the stepping
way
stone
that they were yeah would go ahead and try to trade Russell
right
Wilson.
To the option of trading, because the non-exclusive tag that just gets you two first round picks, right? And if you
the opportunity to match
and the opportunity to match. But if you have the exclusive franchise tag, then you have control of that player and you could ask for more
right.
than two first round picks
or maybe keep them.
Right.
You know, because you're exclusively franchise tagging a franchise quarterback, which we learned earlier in the interview. With Oscar, they don't grow on trees.
They don't grow on trees.
No, they don't.
That's why a trade is not happening.
Just sticks and leaves.
This is why this is the worst time of year for football articles and to be paying attention to them, because this is the stuff you get.
Drivel.
You get Mike Florio talking about how it's possible. Okay, possible, but it's not at all probable. And then you have, so he's the first one out with this article, and because he's on Pro Football Talk, every other journalist out there, well, or blogger, not just retweet, but they'll write their own article about how Mike Florio wrote this article about how Russell Wilson could be traded, and then it just cascades down. And the worst part is, I see these articles, Adam, and the first two sentences are, this probably isn't going to happen. It's very likely this isn't going to happen.
The headline
this
was unlikely.
Happen, yeah. But we're going to talk. We're going to give you 8 to 10 more paragraphs on what the story is mm-hmm. that Mike Florio said mm-hmm. that isn't going to happen. You know, that's how you fill up newspaper in the offseason.
It's unlikely, Brandon, but a wormhole could form just outside of the Earth, and it could be sucked in and put into a new dimension.
We could be podcasting
could
from the surface of Jupiter, in fact, because it is
right.
hot as the surface of Jupiter in this room.
The true fact, too. Yes. Yeah.
So there you go. It's possible.
Yeah, it is. It is possible, but unlikely.
So Mike Florio and everybody else who followed you after your story, do better.
Big time do better, man. It's just, it's, again, it's the making up of stuff.
Right.
That I know it's been a while since you were at the School of Journalism, wherever you went, whether that was, you know, the City College of Community College of people who live under a bridge.
I went to City College and a community college, Adam, so watch your mouth.
No. Like, I'm all for those, but I'm sure there's shady ones, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, it was an online school that's run from underneath of a bridge somewhere. Like, that must be where he went to journalism school and forgot that, you know, in journalism, what you do is research and then report facts and stuff.
Yeah, writing for the internet now, it's like a whole different thing. Being able to write
it doesn't have to
a headline that people are going to click on, and just being able to put out content that people can talk
about.
And I clicked
on it, too, you know?
It's about the worst thing
you
can do.
And I had to shower after. I did, because I felt dirty.
Well, let's move along, because I want to get to some better life, okay. Adam. And I want to talk about a little bit of something this last week. Now, it's going on the side of political realm, so just, you know, keep that in mind.
Earmuffs for anybody?
Earmuffs for anybody who is, you know, just can't hear that kind
anything
of thing.
Anything that's borderline on political around, like you...
Put earmuffs on.
Yeah.
But
otherwise, it's not a big deal. You should just listen.
This is kind of a big deal for podcasters. And keep that in mind. It's not necessarily the idea that it's a political issue. This is a podcasting issue. And, mm-hmm. and I don't know if you know this, but we've been doing this for like 2 years. Almost 2 years.
Nearly 2 years.
And so when I saw that the President of the United States... was going on a podcast.
Right.
Went on to Mark Maron's WTF podcast.
We've arrived.
It feels like podcasting it's arrived in the national consciousness. Now,
he also was on the BS Report, by the way.
And that was a while back.
Yeah.
And, you know, Serial was a huge deal. You know,
of course.
Millions and millions of downloads. But Mark Maron, and not only was it just the fact that the president was on the show, I don't care your political persuasion. That's an interview worth listening to.
Sure.
Because it's something that you don't hear from a president. You don't hear him sitting down in somebody's
garage
just shooting the breeze.
Yep.
And that's all they did.
Yeah. I mean, it's good just for insight into the man, whether you agree, disagree, whatever.
Right.
Like, yeah, just...
And I thought it was fascinating because of that fact. And just the idea of... picturing him in Maron's garage.
Right.
Just like, you know, we sit here and sit, you know, whether it's your kitchen or this room here. Just doing it from the house.
So, if the president was willing to sit in a garage, clearly he should be able to sit in a third bedroom / podcast
sure.
studio.
Clearly.
So, totally tweet the president. And by don't tweet the
at
president.
POTUS. Yeah, at POTUS.
At POTUS to come on Seahawkers Pod.
There you go.
Do it, but don't do it.
Do it. Do it. But...
Totally don't do it.
Totally don't do it.
But kind of do it.
But you should. Hearing Maron refer to the president as a middle manager, that was good stuff.
Interesting.
And, 1 million downloads in like under 48 hours. Just crazy, crazy numbers for a podcast.
The POTUS bump.
He indeed got the POTUS bump.
Gotcha.
And listening to the podcast that our podcast host does,
mm-hmm.
Libsyn. them talking about just how
that skewed the numbers.
Well, and it not only did it skew the numbers, but a lot of those people were discovering podcasting for the first time because of that interview.
Yes.
And so the fact that they've kind of stuck on, they've learned how to subscribe to Maron's podcast, they're going to be learning how to find other shows. And it's just, it's a big deal for me and a big deal for us and
the whole podcasting community.
And Mark Maron is better at life than Skip Bayless.
I agree. Well done. Well done. All right, well, my better at life this week is Seahawks-related, and it is for the team itself, because they have now reached out to the evil brokers, the evil ticket brokers that take those tickets and mark them up ridiculously and make you pay extra for them. They've taken 4,000 of those back from the brokers. And what are they doing with those tickets?
Giving them to the people.
Because you got, just like Jalen Rose always says, you got to give the people what they want. And so 2,000 people that have been on the Blue Pride waiting list are now going to be able to get season tickets. They're also making 1,700 of those, the remaining 1,700 single game tickets available for people on the waiting list. And
$62 tickets, too.
Right.
That's crazy.
Exactly. Now, they are going to use something they call dynamic pricing.
Yeah.
And so, like, the more interesting the matchup, the more you're going to have to pay. But at least they're at the rate of, you know, like the actual regular rate.
I think it said the league low average.
Yeah. And for that, that's pretty darn cool. That's the team looking out for you, the 12s. And you talk about a franchise that is dedicated to their fans. Here is yet another stellar example of what they're doing, as well as, you know, expanding that area near the 12th man flag.
Yeah, putting more seats up there.
Yep, putting more seats there.
Blue Thunder, though, they kind of lose their spot, which is a bummer.
That is a bummer, but hey, look, you know, I mean, the benefit of more over a few, you know, that sort of thing. But, yeah, so
you better bet Blue Thunder's still going to be around the stadium.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to find them a spot. Like, I'm sure they didn't just be like, nah, your guys are out completely. Like, yeah, I'm sure that was worked out. So, to the organization of the Seattle Seahawks, you guys, as a whole, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Indeed. And the other cool thing is that, they make the tickets available on Ticketmaster, which is great for people like us who are outside the area to be able to go online and buy tickets. But, you know, some of them, they're only selling directly at the box office. So, you know,
I'm big on that.
Yeah, well, It's frustrating for people to get on Ticketmaster and, you know, the people that have, you know, the bots set up to be able to buy tickets quickly and, you know, almost sell out before it's even started.
Yeah.
There's people out there that are sophisticated enough to figure out how to, you know, to work these programs.
Right.
And although Washington outlawed it, I mean, that's not going to do anything.
Yeah, good luck. Try outlawing the internet and programming. Good job.
Right. Yeah. And, but for those people that are local, you can go wait in line and get yourself some tickets.
Like a regular human being. You can imagine I'm a big fan of this. You know, I don't have to program a bot, whatever the heck that is. I didn't know robots ran through the internet, number one. Like, are they like mini Terminators? Like, I don't even know. That is scary.
It's a little bit scary.
Yeah. But anyway, I think that's very cool of the team.
Yeah.
You can actually get your tickets in person.
From a human.
Pay cash. Oh, mind blown. Didn't even have to use your credit card.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man.
Well, there you go.
Another successful off-season production.
Huge thanks to Oscar for coming on the show.
Yeah, you carried us today, buddy.
You did.
Yeah, so tune in next week for the mailbag. I'm actually excited for another mailbag. I enjoyed that very much. Again, a little nonsensical, but we're embracing it. So, and you guys are too, which I really enjoy. So.
I enjoy that.
Cool. Well, I think with that,
there's really only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks!
Go Hawks!
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you, inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates Sophia Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.